Welcome to the third episode this week of the MMA Lockcast. Yes, we have the big UFC 300 going down this weekend, but we have an appetizer courtesy of the Professional Fighters League as they have their second regular season event going down on Friday night, also in Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken. So I thought I might as well break it down for you guys. I am your host, Manpreet, a.k.a. MMA Lock of the Night, your boy on social media at MMALOTN and the architect behind the MMA Fight Archive, ensuring that you leave no stone unturned when you're researching these upcoming fights. We cover over 17 different promotions from all over the world and have direct links to past fights for pretty much every single fight that these fighters have that are competing on these upcoming cards. We're closing in on 3,500 fighter profiles for you guys to be studying from. We add new profiles pretty much regularly as fights and more cards get announced. So make sure you guys check it out. There is a 7-day free trial to check it out for free. Check the link in the description below. That is the MMA Fight Archive. All right, like I said, I've already done two episodes earlier this week, and I got a little cheeky with it. We did the prelim card for UFC 300 as its own podcast, the main card as its own podcast, and now I am going to be doing the PFL breakdown for you guys as well. Not as in-depth and, you know, as informative as I do my UFC podcast, but I still try to get through these PFL podcasts with the best breakdown that I could possibly give you guys without dragging on for too long like I like to do with the UFC cards. So there's nothing to really else to chalk up here. We might as well get into the breakdowns. Let's get right into it. First fight up, we got in the heavyweight division between Marcelo Nunes, who comes in at minus 270. He takes on Jordan Heiderman, who comes in at plus 210. Now, I believe Jordan Heiderman was scheduled to fight somebody else. They were pushed up to a different matchup, and he was left without an opponent. And in steps Marcelo Nunes, who was also waiting for an opponent, and they ended up getting matched up here. Now, Nunes dropped his first regular season about last year to Maurice Green in a big upset victory for Green, and then he followed that up with a big knockout victory over Danilo Marquez, which earned him a spot on the playoff roster. Unfortunately for him, he was forced to pull out of that matchup due to an hand injury, and that ultimately put him on the shelf for close to a year, and now he makes his return and hoping to get back on track and hopefully make it to the playoffs this season. He is a BJJ black belt who likes to take his opponents to the ground, search for that arm triangle choke, and try to get the tap. Otherwise, he tries to trust his striking, which needs some technical improvement still, but he showed last time around against Danilo Marquez who needs technique when you have power, and he was able to knock out Danilo that night. His opponent this weekend, Jordan Heiderman, comes from an athletic background. I believe he's played pretty much every sport under the sun and then eventually turned his focus to the MMA world, put together an undefeated record before making it on to the Ultimate Fighter, and he won his first fight against Chandler Cole, lost his second fight to Zach Paunga, and has been pretty much undefeated since that show, other than when he took on Denis Goldsov last time around. This kid's not that bad. He has a great gas tank for a fighter of his stature. He has some good leg kicks, has some good power, some decent speed as well. The only thing that I would like to see from him is more experience against legitimate competition. He's been fighting some scrubs on the regional scene. He has a decent win over Daquan Buckley, who's not that bad of a fighter and is potentially somebody that we could see on the contender series this season, but still, I need to see him against a more legitimate competition, as I do think that he has solid potential. Still only 32 years old, which is not that old for the heavyweight division, and especially with his athleticism and his power, he could definitely make some noise. In this matchup particularly, he's plus 210, which kind of raised some eyebrows for me in terms of Nunes's lacking wrestling skills, and I feel like Heiderman should be able to keep this fight in the striking realm, and then from there, his speed and his power and athleticism could power him to a potential knockout victory here over Marcelo Nunes. So Heiderman's definitely got to stop the takedowns early if he can do so, which I think he should be able to. He should be able to get off on the better strikes, start to wear on the cardio of Nunes, and then really put the pedal to the metal in the second and third rounds and eventually find that knockout victory. So I think the underdog here is worth a little bit of a shot to start off the card. Don't read too much into his loss to Denis Goldsov last time around. Huge step up in competition. Goldsov obviously has a solid wrestling background of his own. Nunes, great BJJ player, but it's whether he can get this fight to the ground, because if he can't, then I think he's going to be in some big trouble here. So give me Heiderman and Heiderman by knockout to kick off the card. The next matchup here is between Elvin Espinosa, who comes in at minus 110, taking on Adam Piccolotti, who comes in at minus 120. Now, both these guys are BJJ black belts, although I have to give the edge to Piccolotti in terms of his ability to be a little bit more crafty in the jiu-jitsu game, especially when the fight hits the mat. When he's on his back, he throws up submissions, looks for reversals, or looks for get-ups so that he can establish his dominant position. And in terms of his striking, still leaves a lot to be desired. Isn't a championship material type of fighter, in my opinion. I think a lot of that has to do with his lack of wrestling ability. He does train out of AKA, so he could be improving behind the scenes. One thing I do like about him is when he does fail on a takedown attempt, he often looks to take the back of his opponent by chaining that maneuver together, and he's done it successfully against a couple of opponents. But then when you see him losing, it's usually to guys that usually have an answer to that type of chain wrestling that he tries to implement. His opponent this weekend, Elvin Espinosa, is still a bit of a prospect, but very strong, a very grindy fighter that likes to push his opponents up against the cage and make it uncomfortable until he's able to get them to the ground, and then from there smash them from that top position or look for submissions. He is a BJJ black belt, trains under Killcliff FC, has been very close to Impa Kasanganai over the last couple of fights, really get some good rounds with him and even cornering him for some of his fights. This is similar to a Jordan Heiderman situation, where I want to continue to see him take steps up in competition and see how he fares there before I have even more confidence in him. I've faded him in the past, and he's pretty much proving me wrong time and time again. So I will actually predict him to win this fight. I think his ability to control this fight in terms of the wrestling realm could be his ticket to end up getting the dub here. But Piccolotti's jiu-jitsu is nothing to mess with. And if Espinosa wants to take this into the grappling realm, I think it is as close to a 50-50 fight as the odds indicate. But I'm going to go with Espinosa, hoping that his wrestling advantage should be enough for him to go out there and get his hand raised on the scorecards. Next up, we got Dagestani Gadzi Rabadanov coming in at minus 245, going up against Solomon Renfro, who comes in at plus 195. Now, Gadzi Rabadanov is obviously one of the pupils of Khabib Nurmagomedov and the Eagles gym that they have over there in Dagestan. A great fighter all around, has an educated striking game, and does a great job in terms of masking his takedowns behind it so that he can get his opponents to the ground and then do his best work, which is either smashing from that top position or grinding his opponents out so that he can take the fights on the scorecards. Now, last time around, he gave you a little bit of a hiccup, or at least some nervousness if you were taking him as a heavy favorite against Peter Buist, as it seemed like he slowed down tremendously late in that matchup. But if you watch the first two rounds, he does such good work with his dominating grappling game that there were a couple of close submission attempts that he had, and it seems like he squeezed himself out in some of those spots and ultimately caused him to slow down later on. Luckily for him, he was able to stay safe enough in that third round and not get finish and still win the fight on the scorecards. Hopefully he's learned a bit of a lesson from that and can bounce back here and have an even more dominant performance to some of the ones that he's already had in the Bellator cage. His opponent this weekend, Solomon Renfro, came up short against Magomed Karimov in a playoff matchup, I believe it was last year. Made it to the scorecards. You know, he's a Muay Thai fighter, and he dealt with the grappling of Magomed Karimov, but was still not enough for him to get the dub that night. It also showcased that he was a little bit muzzled by the power that was coming, or at least the threat of the takedown that was coming back his way from Magomed Karimov, and that could ultimately bite him in the ass here against somebody like Rabadanov, who's going to be threatening with takedowns, level changes, and then throwing his own offense out there. If Rabadanov can really stay away from the big power of Renfro, muzzle the offense of Renfro with level changes and eventual takedowns and smashing him from that top position, he should be able to grind this fight out without too much issue. Renfro is a guy that's usually been with the Tiger Showman guys, but he seems to be bouncing around gyms recently because he's kind of second guessing himself, it seems like. But I do think that Rabadanov has the game to go out there and really grind out Renfro and showcase what he's all about. Hopefully he can just manage that gas tank better than he did last time around. So give me Rabadanov, and Rabadanov by decision. Next up, we got Bruno Miranda coming in at minus 115, going up against Brent Primus, former Bellator champion, coming in at minus 105. Now, Bruno Miranda had, I think, back-to-back upset victories, if I'm not mistaken, and last year's regular season, where he was able to earn a spot on the playoffs, but he ultimately ended up coming up short against Olivier Aubin-Mercier, the eventual winner of the entire season, and showcased that, like, he might not Like, he's a good power puncher. He does a good job in terms of stalking his opponents. You know, his takedown defense is improving. His get-ups are improving. But he's going to come up short against those guys that can really establish those positions and grind on him. And even though Olivier Aubameyang did not complete any takedowns in that second round, he did manage to knock down Bruno Miranda. And then from there, eventually work for that finishing position he was able to get at the ending of the second round. So hopefully Miranda, you know, I think he was more so scared of the takedown that was coming his way. And not to mention, OAM was an absolute beast at 155 pounds. Like, looking at them fighting each other, it was crazy that they're in the same weight class. But good work from Miranda in terms of stopping the majority of Olivier's game plan in the first round, showcasing that he can be competitive against some of the top guys in the division. But I do think he's going to be muzzled by his inability to put everything together good enough to defeat the top guys in the division. Now, he's going up against a tough guy in Brent Primus, who will be turning 40 on the day of the event. He's a BJJ black belt, former Bellator champion, but this was one of those spots where he won it on a unfortunate circumstance with Michael Chandler hurting himself, injuring his ankle, and causing the fight to be stopped. We saw Brent Primus sit on the sidelines for a year and a half, pretty much taking all the perks of being a champion without having to defend it. And then when he did defend, he pretty much lost it right off the bat. He's been up and down over the last couple of fights, in terms of a roller coaster of a run, going through wins and losses. He defeated Mansoor Barnaoui in his last matchup, or sorry, his second last fight, which set him up against current champion Usman Nurmagomedov, and we saw him get clean swept in that fight. He needs to get fights to the ground to have success. His striking game, not the greatest, has some decent kicks, has some big power shots. I don't really believe in his wrestling ability, which makes me lean towards the Bruno Miranda side here, who I believe should be able to keep this fight standing for the most part of it. And then from there, really batter Brent Primus with his strikes. I wouldn't even be surprised if he's able to knock out Brent Primus, but my official prediction is going to be Miranda by decision. Look for him to defend takedowns, or even if he does get taken down, immediately work back to his feet and then utilize his damage-based approach to pretty much nullify any grappling success that Brent Primus is able to muster up. So give me Miranda and Miranda by decision. All right, next up, very tough matchup here between Dovletsin Yagshimuradov, coming in at plus 105, going up against Jakub Neto, who comes in at minus 135. We got Yagshimuradov last time around as a lock of the night play against Rozanski, and that was a fight where I had some reservations with his inability to really get his grappling game going early, but he was able to get it going in the second and third rounds, and that eventually... excuse me, and that eventually allowed him to go out there and grind that fight out en route to a decision victory. In the striking realm, he utilizes a lot of movement and kicks from distance, loves to cross the distance with some big punches every now and then, but I do think that Yagshimuradov does his best work when he's able to get opponents to the ground, excuse me, and grind them out from that top position with the style that he brings to the table. He's has some high-level experience, but I don't know if he'll ever be able to make it to that the top of the PFL ranks, given some of the other guys that are in his bracket. His opponent this weekend, Jakub Neto, was undefeated since dropping his first professional fight over 10 years ago and continues to show solid improvements throughout his career since joining the PFL ranks. We know he has big power, as I believe his first two or three matchups took a combined 2.5 minutes, as he's able to starch most of his opponents. And then his PFL Europe Championship winning performance against Simeon Powell showcased his ability to go into the second round and still showcase that power, just as he knocked out Powell to earn that title and earn the opportunity to fight on the main PFL roster as he is this weekend. I still have some question marks about what Neto brings to the table in terms of fighting guys with even more experience than a guy like Simeon Powell, and that's exactly what he's gained this weekend with Yagshimuradov. I think Neto has shown good enough grappling defense and good enough grappling of his own that he can keep this fight in the striking realm. Then it all comes down to being able to track down the very mobile Yagshimuradov and making him pay anytime he tries to cross the distance with any type of offense of his own. I think that we're going to see Neto be successful in terms of countering any of that striking of Yagshimuradov, and I think it produces a potential knockout here. Neto has some big power. We know that it gets harder to really establish that power as you work your way up the ranks, and I think that this is a perfect style clash for Neto to showcase his knockout power once again. I just can't trust him at chalk yet, especially against somebody as experienced as Jakub Shmerdov. So I don't hate anybody taking an underdog shot here. But still, I just lean Neto. I feel like he should be able to eventually find that big shot here to put Jakub Shmerdov down. But again, minus 135, I would rather take an underdog shot on a guy like Neto, given some of the unknowns that we have of him taking steps up in competition. This is one of those spots. So you either take the veteran and take the underdog money, or think that this prospect actually has the goods and could translate into be something good. And I feel like that could potentially be Neto here. So I'll go with Neto and Neto by knockout, but now with a whole ton of confidence. Next up, we got Antonio Carlos Jr. coming in at minus 270, taking on Simon Byung, who comes in at plus 210. Now, Antonio Carlos Jr. is a 2021 winner of the PFL Championship and Million Dollar Prize. He started off 2022 pretty well with two straight wins, setting him up for a playoff spot against Omari Akhmedov. Unfortunately, he was forced to pull out of that matchup due to a knee injury, and then he took off the rest of 2023 to rehab that injury, but also take part in a Brazilian reality show. So I guess he was just trying to make his paper on the side before eventually making his comeback like he is this weekend. He's 34 years old, probably still has maybe two seasons left in him in terms of being able to establish his elite BJJ style, which was so successful for him through his first two PFL seasons. He's big, he's strong, he does a great job in terms of utilizing that strength to put his opponents into compromising positions, drag them to the ground, and then utilizing his BJJ to finish them. His striking obviously still needs a little bit of work, but luckily his durability is good enough to usually keep him in fights so that he can eventually get his opponents to the ground and then do that good work that he does from that top position. His opponent this weekend, Simon Byung, is a fighter that normally, or at least initially, would look to just take his opponent's head off by throwing big strikes and looking to knock them out. Over his last couple of fights, he's been looking to grind them out, take them to the cage and eventually to the ground, and then do some big work from that top position. But you got to wonder if that's what he's going to be looking to do against a BJJ ace at the level of Antonio Carlos Jr. I'm thinking that we're going to see Byung look to try to take his head off here, utilize his striking and speed and an explosiveness advantage early. But I think that Carlos Jr. is tenured and experienced enough to nullify that type of approach, push Byung up against the cage, wear on him, and then eventually drag this fight to the ground where he should be able to eventually find that submission victory. I do like Carlos Jr. here. I don't mind the chalk on him. I just think he's that much better than Byung in this spot. So give me Carlos Jr. and Carlos Jr. by submission. Next up, very intriguing matchup here as we have Sadibou Si, who is the 2022 welterweight champion, now competing at light heavyweight, pretty much skipped middleweight, jumping all the way up to light heavyweight as he takes on last year's finalist, Josh Silveira, who comes in at plus 100. Now, Sadibou Si is a guy that utilized his length and his reach very well in the welterweight division and was able to keep opponents at bay with his improving takedown defense, his ability to establish his range and his movement to pick opponents apart from distance. But we saw when opponents did get him to the ground, that's where he normally starts to struggle. And even though he's been trying to work on ways to eventually get back to his feet, I wasn't the most impressed with his ability to actually work back to his feet. It's really just getting him down that is the initial challenge for a lot of fighters, as we saw with Carlos Liel. Once he was finally able to get Si to the ground, he was able to do some good work and keep him in that position. But unfortunately for Liel, every MMA round starts with him on the feet, and Sadibou Si was able to do a great enough job in terms of establishing his range and his output from distance. His opponent this weekend, Josh Silveira, we know has been entrenched in the MMA game since he came out the womb. His father is Conan Silveira, who competed in the UFC back at UFC 30 and 40, if I'm not mistaken. So he's pretty much been around the game his entire life. He went to college at ASU and was pretty much entrenched in the wrestling game there so that he can bring that over into his MMA world, which is what everybody expected him to eventually transition to when he got done with college and that college wrestling style. He hasn't really achieved the potential that a lot of people expected from him when he turned pro. He does have two defeats, one of them coming to former teammate Omari Akhmedov, and then his last one coming in the finals last year to Impa Kasanganai. But credit to Silveira to be able to keep that fight going, even though he got swept on the scorecards there, never really quit on himself and saw that fight through all 25 minutes. That's going to be great for him moving forward as he continues to build experience against high levels of competition. And I hope that this is the season that we can finally see him turn it around. And I think they're giving him a pretty solid matchup here to start off his regular season against a guy who's coming up from two weight classes below. Now, metrically speaking, Sadabusi is still the longer and taller fighter here, but it really comes down to whether his strength will translate against some of these bigger guys that he's going to be fighting. We know Silvera comes from a wrestling background, and we know he's going to be in on the hips of C as soon as he can possibly get there. And then it comes to question, will C be able to keep this fight on the feet? I don't think that he'll be able to get that respect from Silvera here, who will be crashing forward and looking to get this fight to the mat. And I think he will be successful in doing so in at least two out of the three rounds. So I think he is worth a shot here at plus 100. I get it. He did not look the greatest against Impa Kasanganai, but I think that C is not as good as Kasanganai, and I think he'll leave openings for Silvera to be able to get in on the hips and look to get this fight to the ground. Whether it's, you know, body locks, double legs, whatever it ends up being, I think Silvera will be successful in terms of dragging this fight to the mat and winning it on the scorecards. All right, next up, we got Mads Bernal coming in at minus 225. He goes up against Michael Dufort, who comes in at plus 185. We'll start off on the Mads Bernal, who was coming off of back-to-back losses in 2022, but in 2023, he was able to pull off back-to-back victories. He was able to defeat Justin Gonzalez as well as Daniel Weichel, showcasing that he doesn't need to rely on the grappling as much as he tried to in those two losses that he had. Those two losses, a lot of that attributed to the fact that he was unable to continue the grinding grappling style in the second and third rounds as his gas tank was compromised, allowing his opponents to have fun with him pretty much wherever they wanted. Bernal is a high-level BJJ black belt and normally does his best work when he's able to take opponents to the ground and grind them out from that top position or open up a submission opportunity for him. And in the striking realm, it's good to see that he's actually trusting his hands a little bit more, throwing with some more confidence, biting down on his mouthpiece, and throwing some combinations. That's how he was able to have success against Daniel Weichel, and where he was able to hurt him a couple of times on the feet and then eventually look for the takedown, which doesn't take as much energy when your opponent is worried about the strikes that's coming their way. Now in this matchup against Michael Dufort, Dufort is coming off of back-to-back victories against some notable names on the regional scene. Former UFC fighter Luis Pena, who he was able to submit in the first round, and then former Ultimate Fighter alum Joe Giannetti, who he was also able to submit in the first round of their matchup. Dufort normally implements a grapple-heavy style and doesn't really have much to offer in terms of the striking realm other than throwing some big shots, but more often than not, usually getting pieced up. And that's how he ended up losing his last fight against Kyle Prepelic, former UFC fighter as well, who went winless, if I'm not mistaken. But that was a fight where Prepelic pretty much busted him up right from the jump and pretty much just kept it on him for the rest of the five rounds, beating him up on the feet and winning that fight on the scorecards, not allowing Dufort to have any success in the grappling realm. Now, this matchup is a tough one because Dufort, I think, has a little bit of a cardio advantage over Bernal. And if he wants to push a bit of a grapple-heavy pace, it could cause Bernal some issues in terms of being able to manage his gas tank over the course of 15 minutes. Dufort is a BJJ brown belt, so he might be able to hold his own should this fight get into the grappling realm. But if Dufort is strong or smart enough, he should be able to start pushing a pace in the striking realm, really trying to work Bernal with some clinch work, some strikes to the body, start to wear Bernal down, and then from there look to start to establish his own grappling dominance, where Bernal might not be able to work off of his back effectively enough, especially considering how exhausted he might end up being. But the difference maker for me here is the experience level of Bernal. I do also think that he is the far superior BJJ specialist. So once these guys do end up hitting the mat, I think we'll see Bernal have solid success in terms of establishing his own control time and dominance from top position. I just can't trust him at minus 225 against a gamer like Dufort. Again, it really just comes down to whether Dufort puts on a pace and tries to take advantage of the poor gas tank, or if he just allows Bernal to dictate the pace of this fight, which will make it look like a clear Mads Bernal fight. So I'll go Bernal by decision, but I'll probably pass on that money line at minus 225. All right, next up, probably the banger of the night. Really looking forward to this one here. We got Clay Collard coming in at minus 200, welcoming Patricky Pitbull at plus 160 from the Bellator scene to the PFL scene, seeing who can reign supreme here. Now, I'll start off on Clay Collard, who's currently on a two-fight losing streak, but when you put it into context, considering the first of those two losses came in his PFL finals fight against Olivier Aubin-Mercier, and his second one came in that PFL versus Bellator card back in February against AJ McKee, you can give him a little bit of a pass. We know what Collard is all about. slick striking, good boxing combinations, has some stinging power, has some decent leg kicks of his own that he's been developing, and an improving takedown defense game, which allows him to really batter his opponents when he's able to exchange with them in the pocket. His durability is very high level as well, which allows him to flow so freely inside the pocket and really try to engage his opponents in wars, which he normally comes up on top of. His opponent this weekend, Patricky Pitbull, is the lesser of the Pitbull brothers, in my opinion, and I think that we see that on display whenever he steps in the cage against talented opponents. There's a clear line between the fighters that he's defeating and the ones that he's coming up short against, and I think that we can give him some passes on the fighters that he's been losing against: Tofiq Musaev, Usman Nurmagomedov, and most recently Alexander Shabli. But I just don't think he's as good as his brother is, and I don't think he's as good enough to compete in this PFL tournament, as Clay Collard will likely show him here. Pitbull might be the better kicker. He still has some power that we need to respect, but I think we've seen good enough durability from Collard that he should be able to get the better of Pitbull whenever they do exchange with their strikes and their combinations. I think Collard will put together a better masterpiece in terms of his boxing, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's able to eventually knock out Pitbull in this spot either. I'm going to go with Collard by decision in this spot, but I wouldn't rule out a knockout at all. I don't mind the chalk either on Collard. I just think he's far superior to Pitbull. I don't think Pitbull is all that great. And I think that this is the perfect example of showing what the ceiling of Pitbull's success will be as he joins the PFL roster here. So give me Collard, and Collard by decision, although KO is something that we can definitely hone in on as well if it's juicy enough. All right, co-main event, probably the fight that I'm looking forward to most in terms of just seeing how it ends up playing out. We got 2022 light heavyweight champion Rob Wilkinson making his return to the PFL cage, coming in as a minus 175 favorite. He goes up against Tom Breeze, who comes in at plus 145. Now, there has been some line movement on this fight. I'll say that right off the top. Last, what I remember, we saw Rob Wilkinson closer to that minus 200 line. So some clear love coming in for the British fighter Tom Breeze. Now, Wilkinson, like I said, was the 2022 champion for the PFL season. He had one fight in the 2023 season where he defeated Thiago Santos with a grapple heavy approach, but unfortunately popped for steroids or failed a drug test of some sort and was pretty much booted from the 2023 season, put on the sidelines, and had to wait until 2024 to get back into action. His win over Thiago Santos was also overturned to a no contest, something to keep in mind there. But Wilkinson normally is a fighter that likes to utilize a striking approach where he picks his opponents apart with solid combinations in the knee, in the clinch with his knees and elbows, but also his ability to establish combination striking from distance where opponents really have an issue in terms of finding him from that that range that he likes to throw at. Last time around against Thiago Santos, he wanted none of the type of striking style that Santos brought to the table, so he put on a grinding, grappling approach, something that we haven't often seen from him. It's very insane to remember that Rob Wilkinson was in the UFC. I think he only went 0-2 with his last victory, or sorry, his last loss coming to Israel Adesanya, and then he's been undefeated since that fight. He's gone on to win the 2022 season of the PFL, also had some good success on the Australian regional scene, and doing some good work with the guys over there at Factory X and Mark Montoya. His opponent this weekend, Tom Breeze, is probably one of the sadder stories in UFC history, and the fact that this guy probably had all the talent in the world but could never really get the mental game down, which ultimately caused him to get cut from the UFC and have some losses on his record he probably should not. The last loss on his UFC record was getting submitted by Omari Akhmedov, a fighter that I believe he is a better BJJ specialist in, but we will never find that out as they probably won't ever have a rematch. But in total, I believe it was about 8 fights that was canceled for Tom Breeze, a couple of them even on fight day, and that ultimately forced the UFC to cut him due to his unreliability when it came to making the walk to the cage when it mattered most. Since being released from the UFC, he is 6-1 on the regional scene, with the one loss that he had being somewhat controversial as he got elbowed to the back of the head by Powell Pollock in KSW. The referee deemed it as legal, and he ended up getting TKO'd that night, so we can kind of put an asterisk beside that one. But he showcased his dominance throughout the rest of his regional fights, where he he was able to also maintain champ status for Levels Fight League. This guy is a BJJ black belt, if I'm not mistaken, and very high level in terms of asserting his dominance from that top position when he can complete takedowns and really get to his smothering jiu-jitsu style. His striking is not that bad either, but I really believe that he is most effective when he's able to get opponents to the ground. He competed initially at welterweight in the UFC, moved up to middleweight after taking off some extended time, but is a guy that has the frame in terms of fitting in at light heavyweight, especially when you see him step into the cage and how he'll look against Rob Wilkinson. The guy is capable of fighting at light heavyweight, especially in a promotion like the PFL. Now, I think that people are kind of overlooking Tom Breeze in this spot. I think he's very skilled, and it seems to me that he has his mental right. He's back with the Team Renegade guys, with Leon Edwards and Fabian Edwards, and I think that we're going to continue to see the best version of him at this stage of his career. Rob Wilkinson is maybe going to have a slight technical striking advantage, but I think for the most part, we'll see Breeze successful in dragging this fight to the mat, and then from there, having complete jiu-jitsu success, and I think it eventually opens up a submission opportunity for him. I really like Tom Breeze in this spot, and I was glad to get in before the line movement hit, but I still think Tom Breeze is good all the way up until even being a favorite, maybe even a minus 150 favorite. I think he has that much of an advantage over Wilkinson. Hopefully his mental is back in check. This might be one of his bigger fights since getting released from the UFC, and hopefully he can go out there and showcase that as he goes out there, and in my opinion, can submit Rob Wilkinson within two rounds. All right, that brings us to our main event. Impa Kasanganai, reigning champion, coming back after coming up short against Johnny Eblen on the PFL versus Bellator card just less than a month and a half ago. He comes in as a minus 325 favorite. He takes on former Bellator fighter Alex Polizzi, who comes in at plus 250. Now, we know what Kasanganai is all about, right? This guy likes to go out there, utilize his takedown defense to keep fights in the striking realm where he usually has an advantage over his opponents. We've also seen him utilize a grapple-heavy approach in some of his matchups, but since joining the PFL, it seems like he's the one looking to get grappled, so he tries to use it defensively so he can go out there and outstrike his opponents. I was very surprised at how competitive he was able to make his matchup against Johnny Eblen, as he stopped some of the takedown attempts that were coming his way, but I think that Eblen did enough in two of those rounds to squeeze that matchup out, but it showcased that Kasanganai might have issues against guys that have a good enough gas tank and can still push a grapple-heavy approach down into the 10th, 13th, and 15th minute of fights. And that's what he's facing here in Alex Polizzi, who's not getting a lot of rub from the public. Now, I think I saw that there was a huge amount of line movement on Polizzi earlier this week, where he came from about plus 350 down to that plus 250 range. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that people are realizing that Polizzi could have the style to give Kasanganai some issues. Now, an X factor outside of the cage that could make a difference in this matchup is the fact that we saw Kasanganai cut to 185 pounds less than a month and a half ago. Has his body acclimated enough to make this quick change back up to 205 pounds in time to fight some of these bigger guys that he's going to be going up against? Polizzi comes from a wrestling background, has some solid wrestling of his own. We saw that on display against some of the opponents that he's been going up against. His last opponent against Carl Moore was a guy that was way bigger than him, and he was able to stay in that fight for the majority of it. But still, small key moments allowed Carl Moro to win that matchup. I think it was the first and second rounds that were scored in Moore's favor, but we saw Polizzi have complete success in deep waters there. And if Polizzi can stay conscious, which his durability has been pretty damn good over the course of his career, and he can really wear on Kasanganai up against the cage, maybe even land some takedowns, he could have some good success in terms of grinding this matchup out. I still think that we've seen good enough improvements from Kasanganai to effectively keep this fight on the feet, hopefully at least for the first two rounds, so that he can really touch up Polizzi and win this fight in deeper waters, probably by decision. But I think the odds are still a little bit wide here. I would still put Kasanganai closer to maybe minus 185 rather than the minus 325 that he's currently sitting at. I would give Polizzi more than a, you know, than 35, 40% chance of winning this matchup. So I might be in one of those weird positions where my prediction is going to be Kasanganai, but the numbers are kind of forcing me to take a small shot, excuse me, on Alex Polizzi here, given some of the wrestling advantages he could have here and the strength advantage. So he has the durability, he has the cardio, and he has the wrestling to give Kasanganai a hard time. Plus 250, worth a little bit of a shot here, but my official prediction will be Kasanganai by decision. And the over 2.5, probably my favorite spot in this matchup. So official prediction, Impa Kasanganai by decision. Would I bet though? It would be the Polizzi side, even just a half unit at plus 250. There you guys go. Full PFL breakdown for you guys. No UFC next week, but there is PFL 3, their third regular season event, and I'll be dropping a breakdown for that for you guys, so keep your eyes peeled for that. Otherwise, check out all the other great content that I got dropped for UFC 300, and good luck on your action this week, folks. I'll see you guys again tomorrow. Peace.
Last thing.